Welcome to another Future of Real Estate podcast. I'm Damien Wild, Editor-in-Chief of EG. Since we began this series back in January, we've covered a lot of ground, from the death and reincarnation of retail to emerging ground transport systems that could connect cities at 600 miles per hour. We've reported from the World Economic Forum, tackled diversity and philanthropy, and tried to inject joy into work. But we haven't addressed one of the most disruptive trends of the last few years. It's easy to underestimate the impact flexible offices have had on the office market. Last year in London alone, 26 new flexible office space providers entered the market, taking the number of players in the sector to more than 150. Between them, they offer some sort of flex space in more than 650 separate locations. And one forecast this week from JLL and online platform Hubble suggested their current market share in the capital could double from a little over 6% at the end of 2018 to an 11% share by 2023. One of the businesses at the vanguard of this revolution is the Office Group. Launched in 2003, it has more than 15,000 members working across 33 buildings. No doubt that number has increased already. Co-founder Charlie Green joins me in the EG studio now. Welcome, Charlie.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So an amazing growth story for the sector and the company itself. Has it all been plain sailing?
Oh, no, it's never plain sailing. It'd be dull, I think, if it were plain sailing. But it is extraordinary. We started in 2003, as you said, and we were pretty conservative with our growth. We were buying our assets. So I started with Ollie Olson, and we wanted to have a capital appreciation as well as an income play. So we thought, let's buy the buildings. Then we were having to compete with everybody trying to buy the same stock. So private land, private developers, residential developers who didn't need consent for change of use, and institutions were also looking at the same stock. It became very tough, and we realized that to grow we had to also look at taking leases. So we were careful, very careful, we still are, about the kind of leases that we take, but it allowed us to grow in a more capital light way. And what has really been extraordinary, I think, has been the growth that we've seen in the last really 3 to 5 years. Is our growth, for sure, we've accelerated in that period, but it's really quite something to look at the sector as a whole, as a subsector of the traditional office market, and to see it sort of kind of break through into that sector and to really now have everybody's attention.
It's reassuring that you say it has really exploded in the last 3 to 5 years, because that's how it feels to me. But you wonder if you haven't been watching closely enough. But what was the trigger? What drove the change?
There are a few things. Technology, for sure, has been there has been a fundamental shift in the balance of power in the real estate world. And I come from a real estate background, Chartered Surveyor and all those things. And I think that when I started out 20-odd years ago, everything was about cycles, landlord's cycle, tenant cycle, and that was a function of demand and supply. And I think what has changed fundamentally has been technology. And that has, I guess, had two influences. One is that it has influenced how businesses run their business model, plan their business models, and how they forecast their space needs if their business plans are difficult to define beyond 12, 24 months. It's very tough to commit to long-term leases, and they need flexibility. And then I think technology has had this cultural impact, which means that we are having this access to knowledge we never had before. So occupiers now understand they can work in a different way, they can access different kinds of working, and there's a level of expectation and a demand that requires a level of service that has really never been provided by traditional landlords. Whereas we talk about and we hear about how traditionally the landlord has been a rent collector. Now that seems to be really a thing. It's not a thing of the past, but all landlords have to look to see how they address the provision of their real estate. And I think what our sector does is express perhaps most clearly the need for that change in addressing what the occupier wants and what the occupier needs. Because if you don't respond to that, you may be facing an empty building. And if you're facing an empty building, that's not a good thing in real estate.
No. And yes, they are rent collectors, but they do have to be more than rent collectors today. But over the last 3 years, to stick with that time frame you identified, uncertainty has accelerated, certainly. Do you think yours is a sector that benefits from uncertainty?
I think we perform well in certain times and uncertain times. I think the need for flexibility is the same, actually. The profile of that demand does change. The quantum of space required changes. But I don't think that those macroeconomic climates dictate whether or not demand increases necessarily. I think people need somewhere to work. People have a level of expectation. We traded through 2009. I would say, if anything, in those uncertain times, people become more sophisticated in what they are seeking, and they become more discerning in the kind of product and price that they want for their businesses. It becomes more important to them to have the right kind of environment. But I wouldn't say per se that the uncertainty means it's better for us. It's just that we have a model that performs well in both markets.
Okay, and then looking forward to that next 3 to 5 year period, the report I mentioned earlier talked about doubling of space taken up by flexible offices. Is that likely?
It's difficult to say. We get asked this question quite a bit. What is the size of the market that the flex sector is going to own of the traditional sector? We also get asked, is the market saturated? I'm not sure those are the right questions. And because if we believe that there's a fundamental change in how people want their real estate provided to them, and that it is not just about a shelter anymore, that this is about the environment impacting their own business, it's about a level of service and how the people who are employed are enjoying that space, what comes with that space, flexibility is absolutely key for that. But it is also much more, and it's about those providers of buildings and space that understand really what individuals are seeking from that will be able to attract the right kind of occupier to the building. And you alluded to competition earlier, and I think competition is fierce, and every week we're seeing somebody new breaking into this market. And that's okay, because actually everybody has to address this. So the major corporate landlords who are providing 300,000-500,000 square feet of space to a single occupier also needs to understand that they have to provide that space in a different way. And that's partly because we're all human, we're all individuals, and we all want something that is more from the provider of that space, the level of engagement, a relationship, all these things that have never really happened before. I think our end of the sector perhaps gives the most clarity to that, but everybody wants the same thing. So the big corporate landlords have to really look at how they provide their space and how they engage with the landlords, sorry, with the occupiers, as well as ourselves. And in a way, what I think the future holds is this sort of meeting in the middle a bit, and the merging of two ends. We're at one end of the spectrum for sure, the traditional 10, 15 year lease at the other end, that's starting to come together as we move, and we're having more enterprise corporate demand taking space from us. And the bigger landlords are saying, I need to address this, and I need to provide some kind of brand and flexibility with my offer. You're going to start to see us come together. So I guess the point is, it's very difficult to define necessarily that the flex sector becomes continues to be a separate part of the real estate market. I think it just all will start to blur. And then really what starts to determine, I guess, the differentiation between different offers out there is brand and marketing and positioning.
Okay, that's interesting. I was thinking back to something that Mark Dixon, you know, one of the early pioneers, I guess, in this sector, said. It's one question of people being able to make a return, but another to run this type of business successfully. People will claim they're doing something different, but pretty much everyone is doing the same thing. Is that what you're pointing to as well? That fundamentally, it's the same thing. It's the brand and the environment, perhaps. That's a little
I think
different.
So. It's just different degrees. But it is a very operationally intensive business. It is a different business. It is not like providing real estate traditionally. It is more like providing hotel services and a hotel offer, because you have to understand all of the elements that come with that, from product and brand and marketing to operational platforms and billing platforms and CRMs. And most property companies are not set up for that. Now, the bigger ones can make that investment financially and in terms of resource. But again, this is not a fast change, because if you look at what BL have done, which is brilliant with Story, there's only so much of their portfolio they can start to unlock at a time. Same with Landsec, obviously with Mayo. And I'm sure they will commit to it properly and do more, but it's not an overnight change. And those companies that don't have that kind of capacity to invest will struggle, I think, to unlock their properties in the same way and compete in the same way. And when you have new operators coming in that have extraordinary firepower and understand brand in a different way to real estate, and can set up operationally very quickly, it's difficult to compete with that.
And do you think it's a sector that will consolidate over the next 3 to 5 years?
Oh, for sure. I think you're going to see some consolidation. So as more and more people come in, if you remember that this is the top of the market, really, and lots of people are coming in at the top of the market paying big rents to just get a presence in London, which is the outstanding city globally for the provision of this kind of offer. I think if you get it wrong, we're very careful as a business. TOG is really disciplined with the buildings that it acquire. So we will only take a building if we believe that we can make a good return on that building. It has to be the right location. All of the real estate principles that have traditionally been applied, we still apply. That being architecture and the building and the bricks and mortar, the location, the context, the neighborhood, the community, and relationships. Those are really important to us. We are a real estate business. And I think those companies that apply those as well, which is why the real estate market has the advantage when all of these new players are coming in, because they have that knowledge. Ultimately, you are still looking at providing space for people to inhabit, but you just have to layer over that operational piece with it, and that's the challenge. So if you get the real estate piece wrong but the operational piece right, you're in trouble. If you get them both wrong, obviously you're in trouble. And if you get the real estate wrong in the operation, I've lost my train of thought now, but you know what I'm saying.
Yes. So any one of the components.
You have to get it right, and you have to be careful, and you have to be disciplined. So if you're coming and looking into the wrong building at a really high rent, and you cannot weather then a downturn, or you cannot weather increased competition and pricing pressure, you will struggle to survive. And I think the consolidation will come with some distressed businesses over the next couple of years. I think there will be consolidation because there will be some smart bringing together of that marriage value of two different operators that, or more, that can bring together a greater value with the sum of the parts. So really interesting times ahead, for sure. Some those that will flourish and those that I think will not and will struggle.
Are you feeling acquisitive?
Yeah, well, for sure. We did the deal with Blackstone. Oh, it'll be 2 years in August. So remarkable partners to have in the business and investors in the business. And of course, we have a financial capacity now to really grow with some acceleration. But we and they are just watching and making sure that the buildings we take are the right buildings. And so it's controlled growth. I think that's the smart play. We're watching more than we're doing, but we got some really exciting, brilliant buildings coming through. We have 47 buildings now. We're under construction with 10 of those buildings that are all coming, will come to the market in the next 18 months. And we're looking internationally now as well. So we have 3 buildings in Berlin, 1 in Frankfurt, and we're looking to add to that Germany first, Paris. We're seeking some opportunities as well. And then we'll look at some of the other key European cities and continue to grow in London. We are about 1.7 odd million square feet in London alone. We should double that, I would say, in the next 3 to 5 years, confidently, I think, if we get the right buildings.
Okay, and how about the rest of the UK?
Again, I think, so our belief is that wherever you have a critical mass of office space today, then there is a market for that offer to be our offer and the others like us. We work in Spaces and Fora and everyone. So, we are in Leeds and we perform really strongly there. We have an active requirement for Manchester and Birmingham, for Cambridge, for Edinburgh and Glasgow. And we're opportunity-led, so wherever we find the opportunity, hopefully, if we can secure it. It's getting competitive, though. It's tough. It's tough to... And we want to buy as well, because, again, we have that capacity to do that.
Only buy or a combination?
I think the growth for TOG will be leasing on the right terms for the right buildings, buying wherever we can, and partnering, because I do see that as a future growth channel for us, that as existing owners of assets look to play in our area more but don't know how to do it, can we, if we're not greedy, can we look to to, and they're not greedy, and we can look to partner up and achieve something really interesting that unlocks further growth for us and delivers value for the owner of the asset.
And those partners are developers, typically?
Owners, developers, could be private, could be funds. We're pretty agnostic about it if the asset's right.
Okay. And in a market where a sector like flex offices is going very well and another sector like retail isn't going so well at a headline level, one is often seen as a solution to another. Do you think you might be in shopping centres?
So retail is really such an interesting sector, you know, from a completely lay perspective, for somebody who just does a bit of shopping with no other knowledge of retail. It seems that this need for experience that we're striving to deliver in the office environment is something that needs to be delivered in the retail environment and shopping centres and high street, and actually really understanding what it is that people want when they go shopping, and that online is growing, but not really a feature of why you're seeing the casualties on the high street. It's poor environment, poor experience, poor product, and wrong pricing. Those are all things that are affecting our sector as well. So it's very interesting to see the parallels with the high street. To answer your question, I think we can animate and activate sort of drop-in working. There's a mobility consequence of technology, which means that people will work on the move. And how then do you respond to that? Can you create workplaces that are closer to people's homes so that their commute is less? But it's not about home working. It's not about, therefore, commuting every day into the central business district at rush hour. But could you manage your lifestyle a bit better, where you can work at somewhere that's 10 minutes from home, and when you need to come into town, you come in at 11 o'clock in the morning, or you work 2 days there and 3 days there? So those are really interesting behavioural changes that we're looking at, seeing how we respond to that. I think shopping centres, high streets is definitely something that we should be aiming to have a presence in.
Okay, well, we'll come back to you on that one.
Yeah.
And when you talked about geographic expansion a moment ago, you talked about Europe, London, the UK. Certainly when the Blackstone deal went through, you know, we expected something perhaps in New York. Is that still a target market for you?
We've looked really hard at it. It's very expensive. I think in terms of competition and the ability to put our product into New York, I think we'd do well. I think our product would be well placed there and would be well received if we designed it correctly. The issue is the economics of entering that market today is not right for us. We believe that we would struggle to perform there. And I think that if you look at entering into a world of construction and acquisition and construction and delivery, that's a big task. For the right building, we would do it today. And we were looking at the Flatiron. The Flatiron is still not resolved for the owners of the building. But it needs to be perfect for us to enter that market. Or the market needs to soften so that our pricing, our entry cost is more sensible. But so for now, we watch and we wait.
Okay. And in terms of the services that you offer within the building, we were talking off microphone a moment ago in the EG studio here, and you said that you've put a studio into one of these buildings. How is the offer itself within a TOG building changing?
Well, we design every building individually, so we're constantly looking at what it is that we need to be doing when we do a new building to see what is current and to try and anticipate what people want, respond to what people want. Content for everybody is so important, whatever business you're in. And I think if we can facilitate that, because we have space for podcast studios and video studios, and then we should be doing that. But it's something that we have to be ever vigilant on and be on the lookout for what is new without being a gimmick. That's a challenge as well, because I think it has to be something that is relevant and useful, in the same way that technology has to be those things as well. There has to make life easier and better for the people using the space. So it's a constant desire to find the right next interesting offer, because people, in many ways, what we're doing is we're providing space for smaller businesses that then can then have access to the kind of facility that a bigger new corporate like the tech giants can provide, but those small companies would never be able to access it. And then when you fill a building with the smaller companies, the bigger ones say, oh, actually I'm employing the same kind of people and I want to be close to those people, so I'm going to come to your building as well. So it's definitely a formula that works. And it's really exciting and interesting to have that opportunity to be thinking about what's new and what we should be doing. It comes at a cost, obviously, and so you have to balance that. And ultimately, though, people are renting. We are providing a place to work. This is a place for them to carry out their business and be successful with their businesses. And so everything is about thinking, how do we create this environment that helps them be better at what they do? And you can't be too obvious or cliched or contrived about it, because people see through that and it's got to be relevant.
Okay. And to what extent do you think you'll stick to the knitting? So WeWork is another provider out there, the We Company now in education, in home provision, in plenty of other sectors, retail too. Might we see the office group become the retail group, the home group, the education group?
Oh, I think we're good at what we do. I think if you get distracted, for us, WeWork have extraordinary funding and extraordinary ambitions. For us, we want to grow meaningfully our core business. There will be some spin-off benefits. Are we going to move into the co-living world and launch an equivalent? We're not. We have a couple of apartments within the portfolio, so we might add to that. But really, and we have some retail just as part of the buildings that we own, but really the thrust of this business is what we know. We've been doing 15 years. We're good at it. That's our skill set. And for now, that's certainly the direction of travel.
A valuable byproduct is often data. Is that material for you?
Yeah. The whole technology piece is so key for us. We are a real estate business. We're not a tech business. However, we have to invest in technology to make sure that we stay at the top of what we do. And that is about everything from our digital channels, our website and our app to collecting that data. And really the challenge for us then is, how do you understand and interpret that data? Because we all know how important it is to collect it. You don't want to collect too much. It has to be pertinent information that can inform how you do things better. We are designing our meeting rooms much more effectively and efficiently now because we're collecting data on which rooms are most popular and how they're configured and designed. And so that allows us to predict with much more accuracy. However, if you look at King's Cross, we have four buildings that are almost next to one another. They're all very different meeting rooms. And what works in one just would not work in another. We know it, we've tried it. So you have to take that data and you have to use it to best inform how you approach your business, but you have to also have that human element and that intuitive element, which allows you to make sure that you're responding to what humans and what people really want. So it's an effective tool. I think for us, what I'm really excited about is, how do we use technology to, one, collect data, and two, have the right technology to be more sustainable as a business? Can we better control our buildings and run our buildings so that if I go into the office on a weekend and the air conditioning is on full blast heat in the middle of summer, it's a ridiculous thing that we have a responsibility as a building owner to tackle that. If there's an economic benefit to us as well, because we have to reduce our running costs, it's a benefit of everybody and it's the right thing to do. So I think the data that we collect on how people are using space, that we know Friday afternoons are so quiet and only that part of the building gets used, so we can adjust our BMS system to respond to that. Those are all really key consequences, I think, of having the right investment in our tech.
Okay, and lastly, it's interesting how you brought that round to sustainability, which is racing up the agenda, rightly, of this sector. Do you think when you think most broadly about the real estate industry, and this is the Future of Real Estate podcast after all, is that the number one consideration? I was about to ask whether it was flexibility, you know, within the sector more broadly, but is it sustainability more so?
Is it the number one? I don't think so. Should it be? Quite possibly. The flexibility is almost a norm now. It's the given that even the kind of the larger occupiers want some flexibility built into their 300,000-500,000 square feet on some of it, and how they can kind of bolt on flex space onto their core space. And that's a really interesting strategy. So I think flexibility is just the norm. Sustainability has to be at the top of everybody's agenda, really. And as building owners, the real estate industry can do so much in terms of the energy efficiency of buildings, green roofs and solar panels and PVs and rainwater harvesting, and it does require some investment. But there is we do see that there's a commercial benefit to doing all of that, because we do believe that occupiers want it. There's never going to be nobody is ever going to say, I'm not moving to that building because of the rainwater harvesting. If there's a vicarious benefit that occupiers have from being able to shout about their environmental agenda because of the building they're in, then that makes your building more attractive. It just is common sense for them to be, for owners of assets to be able to address sustainability in the right way. It does require investment, for sure. Those costs are continuing to become more realistic and more affordable, but you can't lose sight of the commercial consequence of that as well.
So, Charlie, I can't let you go without talking about a certain IPO that's imminent. WeWork's IPO, all eyes are trained on that. What are you expecting?
What am I expecting? So it's going to be fascinating to see if it actually comes to the market. You have to think that the scale of their growth is so extraordinary that they need serious cash to continue at the pace that they're growing. And an IPO is one obvious route for that. So it makes sense that they would IPO. And then it's fascinating to see what the reaction will be to the markets. They are about an ambition which I think is almost not related to the workplace, and that they're after something so much bigger than that. So in a way, it's not really a reflection of the flex sector or the real estate world. And I think we talk about it internally for us. If the IPO is successful, that's good for us. If it's not, then we think that's good for us too. We are pretty positive people by nature. But I think it will be, they're of such a size now and such a profile that it will be very well received initially, I'm sure. And then it's about how WeWork sustain that value, and can they deliver on the metrics that they are going to be promising moving forward to continue to perform in a public environment as opposed to a private one.
Okay. Might it offer a path for you at some point in the future?
An IPO for TOG? I think it could be. It's not something that we are looking at right now. We have with Blackstone an investor who will require a return at some point down the road, but there's no specific timeline on that. But it's certainly a route. And I think our timeline is some way beyond WeWork's if WeWork IPO this year. So I don't see, we're not looking at their IPO as any kind of indicator as to whether or not we should IPO. Ours will happen, I think, if it happens some way down the road.
Okay, well, that's one for the future. Charlie, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And join us next time on another Future of Real Estate podcast.